And thanks to everybody for joining the program tonight. It's the first of a series on leading CCL chapters. So our chapters are all different. We've got small ones, we've got big ones. Some are located in rural places, some in large metropolitan areas. And tonight we're focusing on the small ones, which I think of as groups from 1 to 5 people. You know, it might be tempting to feel like there's something wrong with your group if it's small. But as you'll see from the group leaders that I've asked to share on this program tonight, a small group can be just as vibrant and fun and important as a large one. So I'm going to start with a few thoughts from my experience leading a group and from working with a lot of group leaders over the years. And then we'll hear from Ken Jobe, who leads a small group in Beaufort, North Carolina. You'll be amazed at what he gets done. After Ken, Lori Sproul will share how she used an online approach to connect up volunteers who are spread out in rural Maine. And then we'll end with Katya Gordon's story of how her group in Two Harbors, Minnesota, changed over time. And then we'll open it up for you to share your experience and ask questions and have a discussion. So that'll be great. So here's a few thoughts I have about leading a small group. I think that the most important thing may be your attitude. And I have a story about that. I attended my first international CCL conference in 2011. And, you know, unlike last year when we had 900-whatever people, there were just 86 people there in 2011. And we had 146 lobby meetings scheduled. Some people might have thought that we were just too small in number to make any difference, but that wasn't the tone of the conference at all. The tone and the feeling was that we were embarked on something of great significance and that our lobby meetings were going to make a difference. We were proud of what we'd done so far and confident that it would build to even bigger things. And I credit our leadership, especially Mark Reynolds, with setting that tone and making us feel so good about being there that like it didn't even occur to me that we might be too small to get the job done. I was too busy thinking about how I was going to make those lobby meetings work, to be honest. So contrast that with thinking a bunch of negative thoughts, and I'm not even going to bother to list the ways that, you know, we can put ourselves down. Most of us are too good at that already. But I can guarantee that a positive tone leads to more action and more growth than paying attention to where we feel bad about ourselves. So my advice when you have a small group, here's just a few points. One is that decide that you're doing something important that makes a difference. And stick with that point of view. 2, enjoy it. Smallness gives you flexibility and a personal connectedness to each member that can get lost sometimes with larger groups. When there's just 5 people, you can get to know each other pretty well. 3, support each other to set your individual goals, take your actions, and celebrate what you got done. You know, pay much more attention to what you're accomplishing than to what you aren't. 4, effective organizing and recruiting really takes place one person at a time. I think a big part of why people come to your meetings and keep coming is because you offer them a relationship with you and a perspective and an outline and an outlet for their concern that you know they really need and want. So because it's about relationships, when you've got a new prospective member, you want to go out for coffee or a beer or something with them and really get acquainted. So 2 more points. So 5 is get people involved in taking action early on. Like we say in CCL, action is the antidote to despair. And 6, model getting out of your comfort zone and support others to do likewise. So dare to try new things, which of course we all are when we take on being a group leader. I think there's a joy that comes from daring to do new things that lifts us out of our negativity and discouragement even better than chocolate. So the funny thing about this list is that it's pretty much exactly what I would say to groups of any size. What you learn from leading your small group will hold up well as you grow. So maybe your group will stay small forever, or maybe it'll build up into a medium or large group. Whatever your size, just focus on action and on staying connected to the organization. Your work on behalf of the climate is significant, and I want you to know I value it highly. Okay, so I'm going to ask Ken Jobe to share his experience leading a small group next. I think that his group truly qualifies as tiny, but that hasn't stopped him. He's filed 20 field reports in 2015 for outreach events, letters to the editor, and lobby meetings. And rather than wait till he had a bigger group, Ken jumped right in. So, Ken, would you share with us what you've learned?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, I live on a coastal district in North Carolina, and I started in April. I'm a recent retiree. I learned about CCL in New York City at the March there in the fall of 2014. I'm very excited about the work that CCL is doing, and it felt like it fit me kind of exquisitely and what I thought we needed to do as a nation to solve this problem. So I jumped right in and began to do the work, as Madeline said, as opposed to getting people on board, although we've made an effort to get more people. My wife and I were the only two members for quite a while. We added a third toward the end of the year. I guess the highlight maybe of my time or our time was getting a meeting with the congressman, our congressman, Congressman Jones, in the district right after the June Lobby Day in D.C. I really was disappointed that I didn't get Congressman Jones to sign up, so we talked to 500 or so people, at least by the numbers that CCL published, and Congressman Jones was not among them, and I was very disappointed that I could not get a meeting with him, even though I worked very hard, phone calls, letters, everything that I knew how to do. I felt a little bit deflated, but I said after going through four or five meetings on the Hill that I would go by the congressman's office and I would just stand outside of his office and hope that someone walked out the door that I recognized, and maybe I would ask personally to get a meeting back in the district. And Congressman Jones walked out the door, and I quickly introduced myself, said I was from CCL, we've been on the Hill. I left a packet with him, so I thought he might remember what CCL was. And before I could get all my speech out, he says, why don't you set up a time to meet me in the district? Do you have a card? Which I did. And so I was able to get a meeting with him a couple of weeks later after the June lobby days. My wife and I went to meet him. He was very gracious. He extended the time that he wanted to talk with us. We talked about many things, but certainly we talked about CCL, carbon tax. And although I don't think he necessarily agrees with us, he was very gracious and attentive. And so my objective going into this coming year is to get him to sign on as a co-sponsor to the Gibson Amendment. I think that he should sign on based on everything I know about him. He does not have a good record with the League of Conservation Voters. But I think there is a distinct possibility, based on what he has said and what he stands for, that he may flip to our side, so to speak. So I hope to get more people as we go forward. I've made some presentations recently. Some of them were interesting. It was the most lively Rotary Club meeting, according to people that were there, that they've had all year, because a lot of people, of course, are against climate change in a very conservative area. In fact, some people got up out of the room and left. But I also got a lot of thanks from folks, from others that said, you're very brave to come in here, and I think you're telling us things that we need to listen to. So with that, I'll stop. I'm still excited. I got lots of ideas, and I hope to make progress in 2016.
Ken, thank you. I think you exemplify persistence and determination and passion, and I'll take them, you know, chapters your size with people like you anytime, any place. So next I want to introduce Lori Sproul to you. So like I said, she lives in Maine, which is a beautiful and not very urbanized state. And she came to Ellie and I with an idea to organize the people who are spread out across Maine into an online chapter, and that they'd stay connected remotely but not try to meet physically. And, you know, our attitude almost always when volunteers want to try something new is to tell them to go ahead and experiment and let us know how it works out, because there's no way to predict when someone will have an idea that takes off and which the rest of us can then learn from. So Lori's here to share how she pulled people together remotely. So go ahead, Lori.
Hi there. I unfortunately don't have a lot of concrete success to be able to report, although there's I still think there's incredible potential with the online group. There's no real magic to what I'm doing. I'm just trying to give people a platform who want to get involved with CCL and might otherwise be daunted by no local chapter. So, in fact, my email list has grown to over 100 members, and I know there's two or three or four other online groups starting across the country. So I'm kind of recently re-motivated to really grow it to a bigger potential. My general strategy is first off to keep my personal focus. It's very important to me to have a just in my involvement itself is success in a chapter. So I feel this is CCL is it for helping climate change. So I'm not I keep reminding myself not to be discouraged by not a lot of other members, additional members. Another thing I've done to kind of help my energy in it is I'm an artist and I've kind of evolved my art to incorporate carbon pricing messaging and climate change messaging. So it gives me a personal involvement in it beyond just as a normal CCL chapter. Probably the most important function that's evolved from the online chapter has been my initial effort to keep in touch with other chapter leaders in the state has really grown to be a really tremendously strong network with, and I kind of feel like that's my chapter in itself is the communication between all the state leaders. And that focus is what I, when I email my online group, the meat of what I include in the messaging is what, where the group is at as a whole, where the state is at as a whole, regarding communicating with our members of Congress and other CCL efforts statewide, so that it really feels like a collective movement rather than individual chapters. So that's probably the most important aspect of it for me, and I see the other groups benefiting from that as well. So what I do is at least once a month I will send out an email to everybody, and I get very little response from the emails, but I do make it so I don't even expect much of a response from the emails. When I do get a response is when I've previously made contact by calling or meeting somebody. So once I make a real personal contact with somebody, then I have more success at them responding to emails. But I trust that I do have a sense that these 100 people on the list are paying attention, because once in a while I'll get a very significant feedback. And so I just trust that the information I'm sending out to people is valuable, whether I get response or not. One milestone recently was we were gathering to meet video conference with Susan Collins. So I sent out an email to everybody asking that they send a personal letter that I could print out and hand deliver to her. And Lamy Wellahan is a very big business in Maine. And the president of that business was on my email list, and I hadn't recognized it because he had a different name, the current president, but it was still Wellahan. Anyway, he wrote back and gave me a very powerful letter to bring to Collins. So that was a really shot in the arm as to the value of kind of keeping up the correspondence without necessarily often getting much feedback. And there's also another facet that's evolved from my online group is there's been a few key people that are very strong resources for CCL in Maine that really don't want to go to meetings. They don't, even if it was one local to them, they didn't want to go. And they're very active in their own life and not necessarily, really committed to CCL. as we all would hope, but they nevertheless are very eager to remain a resource. And one of them is an economist. One of them teaches at our college, and so it's very valuable to kind of keep in touch with them, to keep a line of communication going that might otherwise not be fostered if there weren't this online group. I think what's important to me is to pay attention to my own support, to keep myself strong. And what I have there are kind of three areas of support. One is a few sounding boards, a couple people that are strong in the chapter. One of them, fortunately, is my mother, who was there from the start and is right there with CCL, and we kind of help make sure we're all both on the same track. The other chapter leaders in the state, and then a friend of mine who's out in LA is a member of CCL, and it's something that I challenge myself to do, is to stay in very good contact with these people to keep my momentum regardless of the feedback from people online. And I think maybe the last thing is that hopefully will become the most important role of the online group, is that with these 100 people now that are on the list, I'm going to start focusing on which ones are clustered in the same area and encourage them to start a local chapter. Hopefully get a few startups from the list that it's been collecting. So
great.
That's it in a nutshell.
Thanks, Lori. I want to underscore, you said so much great stuff there. I want to underscore where you're talking about staying connected to your support system, whether that's across the country or other group leaders in your state, but how important it is when we're all the time, and especially when we're operating as a very small group, is to stay connected to other people in the organization. So thank you for all you shared. So our last presenter is Katya Gordon, and she is the group leader for Two Harbors, Minnesota. And I hope you find her story of persisting and rebuilding as inspiring as I do. So are you there, Katya? Katya, are you there?
Oh, hey, Madeline, I'm sorry, I had her phone muted. Katya, are you there?
I'm here.
There we go. Sorry about that.
That's all right. All right. Are you ready?
Yes.
Well, first, I just want to say how connected I feel to those of you who have spoken already today. I just really do. I love your story, so thank you. My CCL story began about 2.5 years ago. My family had just completed a year-long sailing voyage in which climate change was an immediate and relevant issue, and we just knew we needed to do more than what we were doing. Not really knowing what to do, though, we started out with a protest. We joined Minnesota 350 in drawing the line, and to my surprise and delight, 70 people came and lined up outside our little town pier on Lake Superior, including the local paper. The next week, a CCL volunteer who drove through the area saw our names on the paper and called us, and the rest, as they say, is history. When we first started a group, I was on fire. At last, I had found something to do that faced the enormity of this problem head on. With even half of those 70 volunteers, I figured, and we had been smart enough to get their contact information, we would have a great group. Now, looking back on it, now, I would have to say that in the first 6 months of our CCL group, I've made a lot of mistakes, including mistakes that I would just call beginner mistakes. And here they are. Here's my interpretation of it anyway. Number one was I did everything. I hosted, I fed, I called, I organized, I made agendas, I wrote minutes, I met the legislator. In my defense, no one else was stepping up in a significant way, and these things needed to be done. At least that's how I was thinking of it, and so that's why I ended up in that position. Mistake number two is I wanted everyone else to have their climate moment at the same time that I did. It was unfathomable to me that people could not prioritize this. I tried to be patient and understanding and empathetic, but it did not go very deep. Mistake number three, I tried very hard to follow the CCL blueprint to a T, meeting at noon on Saturdays, making the national agenda our agenda, responding to every call and email, etc. So looking back, while I had great individual successes, the group petered out. 6 months into it, I found myself essentially a group of one, lonely, and I'll admit it, I was angry. I had nearly lost a good friend, and I couldn't figure out what to do differently. I could tell I was burnt out on working on my own, but if I didn't do something, there would be nothing left. So lucky for me, I had a partial CCL vacation at that time. Our family left for 2 months to stay at Lake Superior. My local chapter CCL duties were lifted, and I had a break. When I returned, I did one thing right, and that was that I did not give up. I called Madeline because of all the amazing CCL staff that I knew, she was the one I felt I could be the most vulnerable with. I basically said, help. This was about a year and a half ago, and I will skip ahead to the present. Today we have a solid group of somewhere between 5 and 18 people, depending on the season, as well as two other groups that we have helped to sprout in our district. We look very different than my original vision. And I could talk a while about, and I've heard some of you allude to this, about how to apply CCL to people who are introverted, who are in the middle of their careers, and who live very far away from each other in the woods. I do think it's a whole different paradigm. Instead, though, I'll just say that it definitely feels like it's working now, it's growing, it's fun, and it's sustainable over time, which we all know is essential with climate change. So I have a few tips that I thought I would share with you. Tip number one, keep changing meeting times and places until there is consensus that you've hit the sweet spot. And same with food. There's so many different ways to do it. And we finally hit upon Sunday evenings, and whether it's light or dark makes a big difference in northern Minnesota. It's virtually impossible to get anyone to meet in the summertime in the daytime. Tip number two, figure out by consensus what is the plan, what are we doing. Make suggestions, but tolerate silence. Tip number three, figure out what. For me, I figured out what I am good at on my own, and I did that. It is rewarding and sustainable for me, and then I'm also mentoring so that others will do the same. Tip number four is to follow Madeline's agenda and meeting tips, but roughly follow them. I find them very helpful to use as a baseline. Number five, match the way we push people or encourage people with our relationship to them. People have talked about this already on this call, so I don't want to say too much, but you can't push people whom you don't know. And once you have trusted relationships and people are following your lead, then you can help people to move forward. But until then, I think it doesn't work real well to try to lead people that aren't yet following. And number six is to trust the process, because so many people will come through your doors and not stay. That is fine. Remember that we don't need everybody in CCL. A few of us will get this particular job done. Everyone else is doing their best too. And then the last tip is so obvious, but I'll just say it anyway, is to ask for help more than once. We are not alone, and that is one of the most powerfully successful aspects of CCL. One quick example is once I felt like I could easily put in the time and do a bunch of tables, but I was worn out and stressed out about spending money on those things, and I just sent an email out asking for help financially, and people that hadn't done anything active in CCL for months or years sent me checks. And so I just think we should always ask for help. And that's the end.
Thanks, Katya. I am so glad you persisted and asked for help. That was just totally awesome. So I think we can open it up now. Vicki, you want to remind people what to do, keep us on time and on track. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Thanks, Madeline. Thank you, Ken and Lori and Katya. And so if you guys on the line, if anyone has a question or a comment, feel free to star one on your phone to unmute yourself or click the microphone symbol next to your name. You can also type your question in the chat box. In fact, I'll lead it off. There is a question in the chat window from Norm. And Norm asks, I was told 10 members are required for group start training, and group start training is required for a group to go from in progress to active. Does this mean that a tiny group can never be active? In parentheses.
I think I should answer that, Ricky.
Yeah.
So CCL has one rule, and that's not it. We don't actually have a rule that 10 members are required for a group start. Our one rule is that you can't meet with a member of Congress until you can do it from a position of respect, gratitude, and appreciation for their public service. So I'd be happy to talk with you later, Norm, and figure out kind of what's the next step for your situation. We do, before we have a group get active, want there to be some people who have had our group start training or equivalent, so that people understand CCL and that rule and our methodology and approach and are connected into the organization. But we're much more flexible than that, and yes, tiny groups can be active.
Great. Thanks, Madeline. Anyone else?
This is Mike Fleming, and I'm in coastal New Hampshire, and I'm wondering, Lori, what kind of mechanisms do you use to have meetings with your online group? Do you have virtual conference meetings? How does that all work?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. There's only probably a half a dozen that I've met with. Some of the members are from a disbanded group in Brunswick, so some of them I knew from that, and a couple I've made the effort to meet with. We don't, just on a very kind of on the fly, if it works, and then it actually happens that most of them I meet when we decide to go to a tabling event or some event that is not just a meeting for CCL, but it's an activity for CCL. Is where I meet most of them. You know, if that meeting with Collins, if a couple, one or two came, and so it's kind of incidental activities that they're involved with more than trying to get a meeting otherwise. The effort that I make to try to connect with people really is by phone. And part of that's just the reality of knowing that we're all quite far away from each other, or some are actually kind of local, but that the basis of the group is that we're not really trying to meet like that. But I will call them up and try to talk to them to get to know them and invite them to participate in activities that are happening. So there's a lot of overlap with other chapters in the state sometimes in these activities. So there's kind of a blurring of lines between chapters when it comes to being involved in the activities. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I was kind of interested because there are obviously some very rural parts of New Hampshire as well, and I've been trying to think about how we might either have a chapter, an online chapter, or in some way involve them in our meetings. And my own experience in my work role, I'm retired last year, was to run a group of people from around the country having virtual meetings all the time, and it can work pretty well, but I don't know if it would work in a volunteer situation, so it's kind of interesting to see if you've had tried that.
Yeah, no, I haven't tried that, I guess I'm not quite there yet to get too structured with anything other than one-on-one. I'd love to work with somebody that maybe can help, you know, work with me to get that next step. But so far that hasn't, I haven't done that. Although there's plenty of, like I said at the beginning, I think there's tremendous potential for an online strategy to connect people. So it'd be great to be able to get there where there's lots of Skyping and group meetings online, but not quite there yet.
I'll chime in that in some states, people have found it really helpful to have regular conference calls. So online could be a little bit of a misnomer in that case, but they're not meeting physically together, and it does seem to work for them to be talking to each other regularly.
Yeah.
All right, great. If there's anyone else on the line, the questions or comments or thoughts about what it is to actively participate or lead a tiny chapter, feel free to ask your question. I got one other question in the chat window. For Lori, I think you might have just answered this. Do you use any other tools for your online group, such as social media, website, et cetera, besides email and video conferencing?
Phone is probably my most powerful tool, I think. And so that's a misnomer, too, because that's not online. But it really hasn't developed to be a group where a collection get together and strategize. It's really still a lot of one-on-one relationships. So I haven't developed the video conferencing or group communication. There's a lot of individual momentum that I'm trying to tap into, and it's a lot of effort. That's what the energy is for. That's where the energy is right now. And what was the name of the guy in New Hampshire that asked the previous question?
That's me, Mike Fleming.
Mike Fleming. Okay. So I haven't got any group tools that I've developed.
Well, one thing I can mention that I'm thinking about using, but I haven't used it for conferencing calls yet, is Wiggio, if you've heard about that. It's Wiggio. And it's if you've heard about it, it does have a group conferencing, and when you got conference calls and even online meetings where you can see what's being discussed. In my work world, that turned out to be a pretty good way of getting people together.
Yeah, I think what I'm challenging myself with right now is to get a handle on the people that I feel are active to maybe cluster them to delegate some of the further steps, including the video, maybe Wiggio and video conferencing that I can perhaps get a handful that could do that themselves. And I'm trying more to make sure everybody's plugged in personally and on the email and signed up for CCL and know about people in their area that are potentially active. And so I kind of feel before a little bit more maybe behind the scenes right now than a visual upfront group leader on, does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So we'll see. I'm very optimistic about the evolution in the next couple of months, but not sure how that will define itself yet.
Great. We still have plenty of time left. If you guys have a question or anyone has a comment, you can star one on your phone or click the little microphone symbol next to your name.
Ricky, can you hear me?
This is Tammy in Panama.
Yep. I think we heard Craig and Tammy. Craig, if someone's calling in from Panama, they get to go first. That's just the way it is, right?
All right. Sounds good.
We got plenty of time.
You're kind. I had a question for Katya. She said something very lovely that said, make suggestions but tolerate silence. And I wondered what you do when the silence goes on and on and on. Do you continue to sort of throw out suggestions that, like, bait until you feel like somebody grabs one, or how do you handle that?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
yep.
Okay. We can hear you, Katya.
Yeah, so I just noticed that I'm a very chatty person, and I would say I do keep generally throwing out suggestions, but I've learned that if I throw out ideas for us to do and no one is answering, then it usually means that people aren't really, that's not what they're going to do. And so I've learned to just be fine with that and sort of say, well, maybe that's not what we want to do. What do we want to do? And then wait until someone else is more uncomfortable with the silence than me. And people start to, that's when people really do start to sort of own it themselves, when they realize, huh, like, there's no magic answer coming from her. Like, what do I want to do? What am I ready to take on here? And that's, to me, that's for our group, that's when the ideas started to flow and when people started to say, I think I could do that. I think I could do that. I don't know if that's helpful or not. Yeah, like one example is just recently we have a guy who joined us who's a beautiful artist, very introverted, and we've had this idea that we need a really good sandwich board outside of our meeting place. We worked hard to get a meeting place on Main Street in our town, and he offered to do our sandwich board, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure it's going to be the most beautiful sandwich board for CCL. So sort of matching people with what they feel moved to do is just a huge part of it.
Great. Craig, I think you were next. Oh, sorry about that. I didn't mean to interrupt there. Craig, did you have your question?
Yes. This is Craig Preston, Regional Coordinator in Southern California. My question is about the marketing side. I appreciate that what's been spoken about is the idea of building the chapter and being patient and going with what you have, and beautiful stories. I have enjoyed hearing that. In terms of getting more people, I've heard the idea of going to volunteer match or Unitarian churches, or just how to get out the word. Right now I just like the idea of a sandwich board outside where we meet. What just ways to get it out there, but I'd like to just hear what are people finding success with, of how to get the word out that we exist and they can find us.
I have an answer to that, or idea.
Go ahead.
In Maine, probably the most successful strategy we've had is to go to conferences, environmentally oriented conferences, where there's a collection of people that are already concerned about the climate, and that are, so we go offering a solution to the problem. But so we just have a tabling event at conferences or at fairs, and collect signatures and try to very quickly follow up on personally connecting with people that have signed up. That's been the most successful venue that we've had for getting new members.
This is Ken. I was going to say the same thing. I've developed the area that I live in is new for me, so it's like starting all over again. So I don't know hardly anyone in town when I started in April. But I've developed a lot of relationships with people in other organizations that are doing something on the environment. And I think what I haven't done yet is really mine that data to collect people to members of CCL. But as was just said, they are associated in one way or another with environmental issues. One of the big issues here on the coast has been there's a number of organizations that are very against the offshore drilling in the Atlantic off the North Carolina coast. And that has generated a lot of people that are concerned, as just concerned citizens, meeting with various political figures at the local level here. And so I've been able to meet a lot of people through just attending those sessions.
Thank you.
I just haven't mined the data yet, and that's the next step.
This is Katya. I have another quick answer if we have time.
Go ahead, Katya, and then I'm going to chime in too.
just a whole, a different, slightly different perspective on it. We do a lot of tabling also, and we get lots of names, and I find that that's all good, but as far as really finding working members for a group, there's just nothing like one-on-one conversations. And so, and I also think that, like, in our area, we have, you know, a significant minority of people who are very involved in environmental issues, and they're already really overtaxed. And those people will join us, but then most of them are too busy, and they leave to go back to their primary environmental issues. And that, I think what CCL can offer and what we would be really do our best is when we think about people and talk to people specifically that we know or that just one-on-one, and just really sort of invite them in a very personal way. And we have a very shy vet in our group, and he finally got brave enough to just start talking to his all his clients, all the people that would bring animals into him. And he's gotten more people to our group that are real people that are lasting than any other way, any tabling event or anything like that.
Yeah, Katya, you just basically nailed it in terms of my own experience. This is Madeline. That when I was building up my chapter in Madison, I just talked about CCL everywhere I went, and I would bring it up, and then if there was interest in what I was saying, the conversation would keep going, and if they changed the subject, we talked about what they wanted to talk about. But I can remember going around the meeting at one point and people saying how they got connected to CCL, and it was like, you know, Madeline talked to me because I was the other Prius driver at her school, and I met Madeline at yoga, and Madeline got me in the co-op, and it was like one long chain of people I'd talked to, you know, my neighbors, everybody I could think of. And, it, you know, I'd talk to 10 people and one would be interested, but if I talked to 100, then I had 10. And that was just how I was in the early days. Nowadays, other people bring their neighbors and friends to the chapter. We do get a lot of people currently from presentations at faith groups, but they're usually is often like one person from out of those presentations that gets interested in coming to the meeting. But marketing, I think, is really about trying everything you can think of everywhere you go, and each of those things are likely to get you one person, and just persist with it.
Great, thank you.
I would like to add, too, that we've had success with meetup.com, which unfortunately does cost money, but the first time we started our meetup group, we got like 6 new members at the chapter meeting, and then we've also had like a trickling of new members since then, some of which have come to the meetings and some are just on meetup, but it's a way to recruit people as well.
Great. So lots of great information, lots of great thoughts and comments. Appreciate everyone's input there. We still have about 14 minutes or so. So if you have other questions or thoughts or comments, please feel free to speak up.
This is Craig. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead, Craig.
Madeline or somebody, can you speak about Match.com? I haven't, or I mean, not Match.com, it's just a dating site.
That's a great place to meet people. Yeah.
Yes, let's go there. Meetup is
sometimes
great.
Sometimes people
as well
do feel like they've married CCL.
Yeah.
Do you mean volunteer match, Craig?
That's it, volunteermatch.com. And I think I heard that one of the interns and one of the staff actually put every chapter of CCL on Volunteer Match. Is that true?
That was originally true, and we're circling back and looking at filling in any holes that we missed. So Volunteer Match is like a nationwide place where people who are looking to get involved in an organization can go and look up different organizations, and we can place as many ads with them in as many locations as we have time and capacity to do. And so many of us as group leaders have had then people referred to us through Volunteer Match that we followed up with.